Welcome to the Squawker Talker podcast. I'm your host, Greg Johnson. And joining me today is a very welcome return for Amar Singh. How are you doing, Amar?
I'm very well, thank you.
Oh, fantastic. Mo is joining us again, Mohammed Bhatt. How are you doing?
I'm splendid.
Splendid?
Splendid.
Already bringing the wonderful words into the podcast room. And Rory Briggs is also on the podcast once again.
It's good to be here. I like what we've done with the place.
Oh, thank you very much. It's a veritable brain trust of a podcast today, and which is going to be needed because it's been a fantastic weekend of football. Obviously, on Friday night, we saw Liverpool go to Stamford Bridge and beat Chelsea, raising some questions of whether they could be more than just top four contenders. And I mean, we're going to start off the podcast by asking, is Merseyside on the up? Both Everton and Liverpool are flying at the moment. Everton up to third. But just to stick on that Liverpool win first, Amar, I mean, what did you make of it? It was quite impressive, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think Liverpool generally have been hugely impressive this season. Started the season really well, apart from that performance against Burnley. And Friday night was a really exceptional display. It could have been a lot more than 2-1. Could have been 3 or 4-1, I'd say. I think, you know, for me, Liverpool attacking-wise just looks so unpredictable this season. I think Klopp's really, his philosophy is really starting to come through the team now. Mm. There's an unpredictability about how Liverpool attack. There's a confidence and verve in their interplay up front. I like the way Mane has just massively fitted into the team and provides this scary pace and this great option.
He seems to somehow bring the best out of Sturridge and Firmino when they're both in the team as well, which was a problem last year.
Yeah, the kind of attacking chemistry seems a lot more balanced than Firmino was missing on Friday, and I thought Liverpool might really suffer from that because Sturridge doesn't quite put in the same sort of pressing effort that Firmino does. But when you have a team effort like that with Wijnaldum and Henderson playing so well, and also Chelsea having pretty bad night as well, pretty off day, I thought it was very impressive, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mo, I mean, Liverpool have created the most chances in the Premier League this season with 72 from 5 games. Yeah. I mean, have they got enough firepower to go further than just trying to get a Champions League place this season?
Oh, they absolutely have enough firepower. Their problems are defensive. No team has conceded more goals from defensive errors so far this season. They will slip up at the back, and that's what's going to cost them. I think if you look at the firepower in that side, they can easily overwhelm teams, have a really good title challenge. I'm not even exaggerating when I say that. I mean, you know, you could say Man City are favourites, but I think Liverpool are just as much likely to finish second as any other team in the league. They've got no European commitments this season either. And the only issue is going to be fatigue, as if Jurgen Klopp's methods wear them out at the end of the season, as has happened before with him. But no, I think they're well within a shout.
Rory, I mean, we just talked very highly of Liverpool's power going forward. But do you think the win at Stamford Bridge summed up Liverpool's strengths, or was it more about Chelsea's weaknesses? They did look very poor at the back. Conte obviously set up to play deep, but it didn't seem like his defenders, you know, quite had the awareness to pull it off.
Well, they struggled to cope with it, and I think David Luiz looked out of depth as well, coming back in, and, you know, he had that rake collision, of course, the bloody nose. didn't help. But yeah, no, I think but Liverpool just too much for them to manage. It was similar to the Arsenal game in a sense. Just, you know, they did actually hold on for like only 2 goals conceded. One of them, a great goal from Henderson. So actually not that bad if you consider. From Liverpool's part, you could think like Joel Matip at the back actually did help Liverpool a lot, considering the rest of the field did attempt so many tackles, but actually didn't. Their tackle like success rates were pretty poor. I mean, looking at the numbers, Lallana 14%. Milner 20%, Coutinho 25%, and Henderson lost all 4 of his attempted tackles. So you had Wijnaldum and Matip really like covering their backs.
Looking at how Klopp set up Dortmund, it's almost like he needs his defenders to be very good in one-on-ones, because what you notice from a Klopp team is his attackers and his midfielders don't always win the tackles. They're more just slowing down the threat so that their defenders can sweep up. So now you've got a player like Joel Matip there at the back for Liverpool. He really does look the business, doesn't he, Mark?
Yeah, I think Matip and Lovren, the balance between the two of them looks great. You know, Matip, he's quite slight for a centre-back. He's quite tall and rangy, and sometimes that doesn't really work in the Premier League, but he's just settled in really well. And I think when he has got the ball, he comes forward and he's not afraid to just come out and play it from the back. And Lovren seems to have sort of put his psychological problems behind him. For me, you know, Lovren, it's all in his head, really. I think he's got all the attributes. It's just about kind of having the confidence to assert himself on a team and assert himself on the game. But I think, as I said, amazing start to the season for Liverpool. When you consider they've got 7 points out of 9 against last season's top three, and that's not even considering a big away win at Stamford Bridge on Friday night, it bodes really well. I think going forward now, what we want to see from Liverpool is, can they do it against the lesser teams like Burnley that are going to sit back concede all that possession to Liverpool, what have Liverpool got then? You know, is it going to be Coutinho just pinging wild shots from outside the box, or is it going to be something more incisive than that? So I think that's going to be the real challenge for Liverpool this season.
Just to stay on the point of dropping back at the moment, we talked about David Luiz just before then. He actually made the most passes of any player in Chelsea versus Liverpool. But Mo, talking about a lack of incision, he kind of floated through the game. He distributed the ball, but not really in a dangerous way. It was quite a strange performance, almost cosmetic, you could say.
It's difficult for a defender like that to come in first game against Liverpool and really sort of drive something forward, especially when there's not much movement ahead of him. And Chelsea really didn't offer much in terms of an attacking threat against Liverpool. I mean, they really should have. Part of that one Nemanja Matic run and then the Costa goal.
I think they put in double the amount of crosses at Liverpool. It was like 20.
It was very basic attacking. It was like whipping the ball, getting wide. It was Moyes-esque in a way. They didn't really build the ball through midfield. Now, I know Conte's not necessarily known for that, but it's something that if you're going to have a player like David Luiz, it's something you should really look to be doing, because I mean that's one of his great strengths, is stepping out from defence with the ball at his feet and moving the ball on and moving it into midfield.
I would say, I think David Luiz, I agree with Mo, he was not the worst Chelsea player on the pitch on Friday night. He was actually all right. It was Cahill's fairly poor clearance that landed on Henderson, and yes, it was a world-class strike, but I thought Cahill was poor. I thought Ivanovic and Azpilicueta were poor, and Oscar and Willian were poor. They keep giving the ball away, and like I said, it doesn't do the defence any favours. Kante and Matic were okay, but I just think Chelsea have problems in terms of if Willian and Oscar are not, you know, keeping the ball, if they're not circulating possession, and with Fabregas not deemed good enough to get into that team, there was no passing in midfield.
Well, one from one blue team to another. Bit of a talk about Everton. They are doing really well. Great start under Ronald Koeman. I believe it's their best start to a season since 1978. So, you know, that's shows how good they're doing. But, I mean, can they challenge for more than just top six this season, though?
I think they're maybe. I mean, it's weird to say that no, but I mean, Lukaku hasn't exactly been flying on all cylinders yet, and yet look how well they're doing. Once they get him rolling this season, you know, you just never know. Obviously, a big part of the problem with Everton is a lot of it goes on Ross Barkley. And as his form goes, the team sort of goes with him. So, and he's not consistent. Well, he hasn't been consistent until now. Now, maybe Ronald Koeman as a coach, you know, Ronald Koeman is an excellent coach. He's played with Pep Guardiola, played with legendary midfielders at Barcelona, at Ajax. You know, he knows how to play brilliantly, very brilliantly, play consistently, how to win things. So maybe he could give Barkley some kind of guidance that would get him consistency, which would then in turn lead to Everton's consistency.
Well, he did actually hook Barkley off in the game against Sunderland, and he did look a little bit better at the weekend, actually. Maybe he's had a bit of a talking to, you know, so come on, you know. I think he did say in his press conference, for a player of his quality, he can't be losing the ball as much as he does, and he needs to do more with it.
Koeman has an aura about him, and I think immediately he's commanded a lot of respect. He looks decisive. He looks like he's not going to take any nonsense. You know, he hooked off Barkley at halftime against Sunderland. He withdrew James McCarthy after 38 minutes against West Brom. And also, I think they've made some really smart acquisitions. I think Idrissi Gueye, Yannick Bolasie and Ashley Williams, they've all strengthened that squad. And look, on the face of it, Ashley Williams is not a better player than John Stones, technically, but for that team and for what Jagielka needs next to him, I think Ashley Williams has just slotted in perfectly, and it's made Jagielka look a lot more solid as well.
Definitely. And on that point, Rory, I mean, only Spurs have conceded fewer goals than Everton so far after five games. Everton shipping only three in five. What else has Koeman been doing right? Is it just a case of getting them organised compared to what Martinez had?
Well, I think it kind of links back to the overall theme about Merseyside being having the best signings of the summer. Everton signings working now, the wingers, especially Bolasie. Lukaku's basically find his perfect partner, finally. I mean, De La Feu, you know, he started, you know, in fits and starts last season.
He's having some nice cameos, though, isn't he?
De La Feu got eight assists last season, but, you know, needed to create a lot more chances. His crossing was quite erratic in stages. So for Bolasie to just kind of float about, make, you know, real like chaos down the flanks, and then Lukaku looks, you know, reborn. You know, literally, he is a streaky striker, but, you know, he's come back.
Great hat-trick as well against Sunderland when they turned it back on in the second half when Barkley left. But as you said, Amar, Idrissi Gueye, like, he looks like possibly one of the signs of the season in midfield. I mean, you look at what Kante did last season for Leicester. Idrissi Gueye's already got the most tackles this season with 24. I mean, can he be this season's N'Golo Kanté? Is that a little bit of a stretch there?
It's a bit reductionist, but especially because there was so much more going into what made N'Golo Kanté great, is that, you know, Riyad Mahrez and Jamie Vardy banging goals, Wes Morgan at the back, etc. But yeah, you know, he could be. I mean, he was last season. This is the thing, we're talking about this, but I mean, he was playing for Villa, and Villa are terrible, so that's why they went down. But he had, until like March. I think he was matching Kante for interceptions, for tackles won, for defensive actions in general. He was an amazing defender last season. And the fact that no one except Everton thought, oh, hey, he's really good, it speaks to Roman Koeman's savviness and his awareness of in the market. I mean, he showed that at Southampton as well. He knows how to buy players. He knows how to bring players. So he brought Virgil van Dijk there. Look how well van Dijk's doing. Mm. Van Dijk was playing with Celtic. Everyone's like, oh, it's Scottish League. Doesn't matter. Yeah, it matters. Good players are good players, no matter where they are. Mm. And, once they get Barkley and Lukaku really... I mean, I know Lukaku's got a hat-trick already, but once they get them really, really in their consistent groove, which is what those two have lacked before, they could really go far. Mm.
Speaking of Koeman and what he's doing with Everton, it's quite a contrast to what's happening at Manchester United under Jose Mourinho. I mean, there was when they were winning three in a row, 100% record, 9 points from three, a lot of the criticisms were called knee-jerk, or you're being nitpicky, but I think it's been proven in the last three results. I mean, we talk about Koeman with Everton's best start since 1978. Mourinho has now lost three matches in a row in the same season for the first time since 2002 when he's at Porto. So this is like historically bad form for the Portuguese manager. But yeah, it's not really coming together, is it, Mo?
No, not at all. It looks like he's trying too hard to appease the fans who are worried, oh, it's Mourinho, it's going to be ugly, negative football, oh no. And that he's trying to make, no, look, it's going to be fine, trust me, guys, we're going to play attacking, we're going to be open. But you know what, this is the thing, Mourinho never really he doesn't have the team to do that. And very rarely has he had that team in his career, even that Chelsea side.
You don't think he's got the players to be able to play attacking football now?
He kind of does, but that's not really his thing. And I don't think he knows how to coach attacking football. If you look at most of the great attacking sides he's had in his career, it's been very, very basic in terms of structure, and he's basically let the players get on with it, and he's organised the defence. And that's what you're having now, except that there is no leader, there is no shape to what United are doing structure-wise. He doesn't know his best 11, so that's the problem. He needs to go full Mourinho and just focus on the defence.
Rory, I mean, I've seen this is in the extreme wild areas of Twitter, but I've seen some people say the football is as boring as Louis van Gaal and the tactics are as basic as David Moyes. Do you think that is too harsh on what Mourinho's done so far?
No, I don't think. I think he's a destructive figure, and he's basically become. It's kind of a weird analogy, but he's become his own sort of Curtsian figure. If you're going to go sort of Apocalypse Now. You know, his methods have become unsound.
He's in the shadows, is he?
Never get off the boat.
Yeah, I think this is a part of, if you like, a long decline for Mourinho, right? If you look at the stats, he's now lost 16 in 34 games. So if you include what he did at Chelsea last season, and compared to 16 in 111 prior to that. And he's now lost 5 in his last 10 league home matches. And if you think about Mourinho and all that success he had at Chelsea, to start with, it was always, Stamford Bridge became this unbelievable fortress. So what happened to that Mourinho? Where has that Mourinho gone? And personally, I just look at it and I think, what is his identity now? Who is Jose Mourinho now? Is he the dark lord of anti-football that he sort of became at Inter, kind of, you know, punching, Pep Guardiola's Barca in the nose? Or is he, you know, this great kind of man manager who really gets the best out of players and makes players like Ibrahimovic want to run through walls for him? You know, what exactly is he? Does it go hand in hand with Manchester United? They hired Jose Mourinho not to be Mourinho light. They hired him to be Jose Mourinho and to win at all costs. Mm. And what we're seeing is this kind of mishmash fudge of a man, basically.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're talking about the player, he's not being true to himself. I mean, with Chelsea in that first season, which you'll remember, historical season, they conceded 15 goals as they won the league. They've conceded 6 goals already. In that season, they lost one game, whole season, and they've already lost 2. I know that was 10 years ago, but that was the guy that Man United hired. That was the guy that won the Inter job, that won the Real Madrid job, that did pretty well with Real Madrid, very well with Inter. You know, so you're looking at this guy, but Mourinho doesn't look like that guy anymore. You know, he went to Spain looking like a Vincent. You know, looking like Robert De Niro in The Godfather 2, came back looking like Paulie from Goodfellas. You know, it's just he just looks like a broken kind of guy.
Yeah, I mean, he's not being able to meet his primary objectives, which are, you know, win at all costs. You can't lose. He's only won 7 in 20 Premier League games. He's the king of the 2-0 win. It's not happening for him still. So where do you turn to now if you're him?
I mean, it's very early in the season so to be like, oh, it's finished. But essentially, there's an easy way to arrest the decline, which is just embrace what he has done in his career. Go full Mourinho. He tried to halfway house it at Chelsea. It doesn't work. He needs to go full Mourinho. Defence, powerful forwards, direct play.
And drop players.
And drop players who are underperforming. Like
Wayne Rooney.
Certain, well, you said it. There you go. Someone else said it. I didn't say it this time. But yeah, drop players that are underperforming, you know. And
I mean, this is a small podcast room, but there is an elephant in this room.
Yeah,
called Wayne
nice.
Rooney.
Not a nice thing to say about.
And he's wearing the number 10 shirt. But I mean, one thing I would like to say on that is, it's a chance that you've kind of touched on it there in a way that we're not going to commit to it just yet. But it's a chance that Mourinho is kind of past it. I mean, you look at the players that left him at Chelsea. I mean, Kevin De Bruyne is a very intelligent, very modern footballer. And it's almost like he looked at what Mourinho was trying to do with this kind of macho, hyper, you know, I'm going to crush you and then build you back up atmosphere in the dressing room. And he kind of said, you know what, I'm going to go somewhere else that's a bit more professional. I'm going to improve myself and then go to Man City under Pep and kind of flourish there rather than be beaten into this almost like soldier by Mourinho. Is there an element that Mourinho is a bit old hat of his kind of...
Yeah, football's changed. You know, it's not, you know, the old, you have to break a stallion before the stallion reaches full potential thing. That's not how football works anymore.
We've gone free-range footballer.
I think to say he's past it, I don't know. I think he's shown a sense of decline over the last few years, absolutely. Last couple of years, since winning that title with Chelsea, there's been a sign of decline. But I think the whole of that club needs to work to him and to his agenda. I think he needs to go. You say Kurtzian, and you know, it was Fergie who was like Colonel Kurtz towards the end. You know, banning every journalist that wanted to question him.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely in 100% control of this colony that was Manchester United.
Mm, yeah.
And I actually think that if you're getting Mourinho on board, you have to give him that support. If that means letting him, you know, if he's facing pressure to not drop Wayne Rooney, well, that's out of order. You know, yes, he's the club captain. Yes, he's the face of the club. Well, you've brought in Pogba, actually, who's going to take care of that and who's much better suited to Mourinho's tactics. You
plus,
know.
Stormzy is more hyperbole than stereophonic. So
everyone loves a bit of Stormzy. Exactly. But, you know, and the other thing is, well, Pogba is here, and there's some people might be saying, actually, for 89 million, yes, okay, he's not playing in a three-man midfield, and we could have a whole pod about Pogba tactics, but for the amount that's paid for Pogba, should he not adapt to this role? Should he not adapt to this sitting role? He's 24 years old, he's not 19. Maybe he needs to figure out how to help out the defence a little bit.
Mm. Well, Pogba has cut a very frustrated figure so far. And I mean, United actually recorded the lowest shot accuracy rate of the weekend, with just 18% of their shots on target, many of them from very speculative positions, which, you know, you'd hope players would kind of look for a pass maybe instead. But before we move on, I mean, gotta give a shout out to Watford as well. Their tactics were spot on, weren't they, against Man United?
Oh, absolutely. They defended deep. They let United have the ball, which Mourinho teams never looked fully comfortable doing. And they hit on the break very smartly into the channels behind the fullbacks. Antonio Valencia is still not a right back. I don't care what anyone says. I don't know why Mourinho. I mean, that's the other thing. Mourinho had a chance to buy. He said, "Oh, I need four players." Now United need at least eight players. But anyway. Watford. Really,
the Hollabas was like fantastic down the left, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely ripped Valencia to pieces. Absolutely fantastic. You know, Jan Mat was brilliant against. I mean, until he got concussed, obviously. Mm. Both against Pogba, against Martial, against Rashford. He did not ever really look overly troubled. And up front, Troy Deeney just absolutely massacred the Man United defence. It was brutal.
But for me, actually, I think Troy Deeney is one of the most underrated players in the Premier League. What he does for that team as a focal point and how combative he is. He must be an absolute nightmare for centre-backs to play against, especially centre-backs as flawed as Chris Smalling. You know, that you could see they really, really struggled with him all afternoon. And you've got Ighalo as well, who's the perfect foil for Deeney, apart from his horrendous miss.
Yeah.
He had a great game. He was pressing, harrying from the front. I think the two of them are just a fantastic partnership.
Is Deeney the player Rooney should be in some ways? I mean, I'm not in a reductive sense, but he works so hard. He's almost what Rooney used to be. You could almost say.
A beefy centre forward that can lead the line, hold his.
He's not just blunt, is he? He can
bring his teammates into play, which is exactly what Rooney used to do. What Drogba used to do a lot.
He can go past players as well. Mm. You know, he's quite. He's got some real all round attributes.
People think of Troy Deeney as a big lug of centre forward, but he's way more Drogba than he is Andy Carroll.
That's Watford in their fantastic win. United also some shout outs for Roberto Pereira and Etienne Capoue, who were fantastic in the field.
Brilliant.
But we're going to move on now to some other big results in the Premier League. Four sides scored four goals in the Premier League this weekend. I mean, there's already been 144 goals scored this season, 2.88 per game. The old chestnut, bad defence, or is the Premier League great to watch? I mean, what do we all think, Amar?
I think this sort of reflects the spread of TV money now across the Premier League. And I think you've got teams that are now able to bring in more attacking talent. There was a time where a team like West Brom wouldn't have players like Chadli and players like Rondon, even, who were both fantastic at the weekend.
And Chadli got two goals and two assists.
Yeah, it was excellent. You know, a bit like Capoue. You know, it's like those players that Tottenham signed after Gareth Bale left.
Yeah.
Something's actually gone right for them now, just not at Tottenham.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, West Ham with Payet was excellent despite their horrendous defending, West Ham. And then even Crystal Palace have got the likes of Andros Townsend, Christian Benteke. There was a time where you wouldn't see such a even spread of talent across the league, and I think that's reflecting in the goals that we're seeing.
It also plays into the fact that there's not enough elite sides in the Premier League. I mean, genuinely European level elite. Man City are one, and that's why they're going to keep winning and stuff. But it's a sort of great, like, money is a great leveler of talent, and the fact that Man United got their coaching appointment right, but then botched their summer transfer window essentially just at the end, and then
United.
They need more than four players, man. They're really missing an experienced centre-half next to Eric Bailly. I mean, you saw when David Blin's out, look how bad Bailly has been the last two games. And then Chelsea, of course, needed a whole new defence, only signed two at the last second. So, you know, those two should have been, you know, they appointed elite coaches. Liverpool, look what they're doing with their coach. They've trusted in him. They've gotten the players he wanted. Look what he's doing to them now. You know, there's only one elite side, so that kind of compresses things a bit more. That's why you get these results. I mean, Palace are amazing. Scott Dan and James Tompkins both scoring. Punchin gives them the kind of thrust they have. I mean, he's taken over from...
He's had a great start to the season,
Yeah, I mean, he's 14 chances created. Only William, Tadic and De Bruyne have more than him. He's been absolutely incredible.
Rory, I mean, Arsenal, one of the sides that scored four. What did you make of that performance? There's been a bit of concern about whether it's going to come together for the Gunners, but they look pretty good.
Yeah, it's a totally different approach to the game than the Southampton one. And it continues the sort of good away form that we saw last season as well, which is both good but also worrying. You think at home you don't want to have that again. But yeah, against Hull, it was actually kind of a little bit tricky at one point where penalty was missed, and you think, oh no, we're going to see this same story all over again. Yeah. And Hull did try. They were plucky, but as soon as they lost Livermore, it was just, you know, downhill from there.
I like Sanchez, though. I mean, got to have a shout out for how he's finally looking good in that centre-forward role.
Yeah, well, yeah, he is. But I think there's still... If Giroud had been there, it could have been even worse for Hull. I think even though Sanchez has done well and he's scored and he's making assists in the league already, you've got to think about Alex Iwobi. Mm. You know, he's only 20. He's making Theo Walcott look good, which is no easy feat. You know, so... No, but he's great because he's fearless and he really wants to improve. I think about the PSG game midweek. He didn't really have the best of days, and he, you know, admitted it afterwards. He said, oh, it wasn't, you know, I've had a bit of a mare here. But even after the game, the first shot he should have scored, but Alexis Sanchez got a little flick on it, so it went to Sanchez. But after the game, he was like, oh, I've been robbed here. And that just shows you, like, the real intent that he has at a young age. And he's also a player that Arsenal haven't really had. Someone with strength and, like, real intelligence, someone who isn't like Walcott or even Oxlade-Chamberlain.
Mm.
So, yeah.
You just have to hope Wenger doesn't stagnate him like he did to those two.
Yeah, and you got a shout out to that Xhaka goal as well.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, why isn't he starting? It's quite a strange one, really.
Well, I think it goes back to the Coquelin-Cazorla. If it's not broken, you've got to keep it going, don't fix it. So,
but is it good enough?
It's not good enough. I think for the small teams it works, but if you look at Coquelin, his positioning, he's trying to play Ozil. He's trying to do an Ozil, basically. He's passing little tiny short passes around the box, darts into the box himself.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work. I mean, against PSG, he only made one pass into the box successfully.
Man City's win over Bournemouth has been described as one of the best performances we've seen in the Premier League for quite some time. Oof. I mean, we could probably do a whole podcast.
I could, ripping it, definitely.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, what would you say was the secret? Is it just Pep's tactics, like, really kind of flourishing early on?
Yeah.
But, I mean, Sterling was fantastic on the left.
That's exactly what it is. It's just Guardiola's tactics and his system of play, which everyone said, oh, that's never going to work in the Premier League. Well, here it is. You know, he's the best coach in the world. He's got great players. He had great players. He's added great players. He's made average players good. He's made good players great. And he's made Kevin De Bruyne into one of the best midfielders in the world. You know, it's a system where you, complete opposite of Mourinho, a structured system where you believe in your players, you put them in the best position possible to succeed. You get rid of veterans, respected veterans, great veterans. Joe Hart, massive winner, one of the best players in City's history. Yaya Touré, probably the best player in Manchester City's history. Out the door. Yaya Touré hasn't left because
he's on his way out the door.
His contract is way too big.
He's on the exit bar.
Yeah,
the door is ajar.
He's there. The door is ajar and he's ready to walk out.
He's sitting on the bench counting his cash, isn't he? He's making a lot
eating
of money.
Eating his cake.
Doing this.
Having his cake and eating it. There we go.
There we go. He's finally done that. But yeah, it's all about the system. It allows players to play their best possible way. They'll hit bumps. They'll lose games. They'll play poorly as well. But the start just shows that the players believe it. Look at Sterling. Sterling has transformed.
Yeah, I think I'm really pleased to see Sterling galvanised under Pep. I think we were all talking about it this year, weren't we? The prospect of Sterling under Pep Guardiola and how he could be this really great multifunctional attacker, the sort of player that Pep Guardiola absolutely loves. And, you know, he was unfairly made the kind of poster boy, the scapegoat of England's failings this summer when he really did not deserve to be.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely great to see him have his mojo back, really. And he was he had this amazing run in the box, which almost resulted in a goal. I think he was just saved. But he just looks absolutely on fire again.
It's got a lot to do with confidence as well. But he is finally looking like that, you know, 49 million.
And when Iheanacho scored, you saw he pointed at Sterling, went straight over to him. So you kind of get a sense that the dressing room are kind of rallying around him as well, which is a nice thing to see.
Definitely. One dressing room that isn't rallying at the moment is Stoke City. They're the team we haven't mentioned yet. They were on the receiving end of Crystal Palace's 4-0 win at the weekend. And a bit of a worrying stat here for Mark Hughes and Potter's fans. Only Manchester City are scoring at a higher rate than Stoke are conceding goals this season. Stoke have conceded the most goals of any team in Europe's top five leagues.
Yeah.
I mean, is Hughes going to go, or is it like last year where they started slowly but they'll pick it up?
I think Mark Hughes needs to look through the archives, have a look at Tony Pulis Stoke, Stoke 1.0, that aggressive team that were really difficult to play against, and just try and instill a little bit of that back into the team, you know. At the moment, Stoke, for me, are a team in transition. They're falling between two stools of being this really tough, aggressive side and being the side that plays attacking football with all these, you know, nice, silky attacking players like Shaqiri, you know, and Arnautovic, and it's just not working.
I would disagree. I would just say this is what happens when you have a team built around the attacking talents of Shaqiri, Marko Arnautovic and Bojan, who are basically massively temperamental and inconsistent players. They're not going
to
fire everyone.
Isn't that down to the manager, though, if you're going to build a team around?
It's Mark Hughes' fault. Obviously, when you build a team around these kind of players, you need to get them in line. Otherwise, you're going to have stuff like this. Also, they started John Walters at the weekend. You know, they need to get Wilfred Bonny regularly playing up front. And then, you know, but it's about consistency of performance. And those the Mavericks that they're built around just won't deliver it.
Mm. Well, speaking of Mavericks, we're going to turn now to Europe and some of the best things that happen in the continent. Ooh. On the continent, in fact, this weekend. I mean, Real Madrid equaled Barcelona's record of 16 straight La Liga wins in a row. I mean, what's next for Zidane, Mo?
To play good football.
You've not been impressed so far?
That sounds church. No, they were very impressed with the weekend. But this sounds church. But they honestly, at times in this run, a lot of times, they haven't really played well, but they've found ways to win. Zidane's ability to galvanize, I mean, it's Mourinho-esque, you know, it's frankly, or Ferguson-esque even, it's frankly incredible. Madrid don't even have to play well and they will find a way to win a game. It's remarkable. Their will to win is incredible, and once they start gelling as a team and start playing really liquid football, we know they can, they've got the attacking players to do it, that they're going to be a scary prospect.
Mark, one player from the Real Madrid ranks that people may be expecting to see move, maybe on loan or something, he's denied it after his, what I'd say, match-winning performance against Espanyol, James Rodriguez. It just surprised me, this stat. No midfielder for Real Madrid has been involved in more goals, I should say, since his arrival in 2014. 43 goals he's had a hand in, either as a scorer or a creator. I mean, when you've got a player like that to bring in when Bale and Ronaldo don't fancy a game, that's surely a huge benefit for a team like Real Madrid.
Yeah, I think James has been a victim to an extent of the system that's been deployed with Bale and Ronaldo and Benzema, you know, at the front. And he hasn't really kind of slotted into that team particularly well. However, you know, he's, for me, one of the great throwbacks in the game, you know, proper number 10, proper talented number 10, the absolute star of the 2014 World Cup. And he was a player that Real Madrid did not need. And I think Perez was like, just get me the star of the World Cup.
Yeah.
So they signed him without any thought of how he's going to integrate into the team.
A bit like Beckham again.
Absolutely.
I've got Figo on the right. We'll get another right winger.
Yeah, so. Exactly. The worst of what we saw in the Galacticos era kind of manifesting again. But I think, you know, anyone who enjoys football the way it should be played and the traditions of football and South American football, you know, he plays with a smile on his face. When he scores, he celebrates with a dance. You know, I think he's a fantastic talent, and nobody wants to see him ending up in China or, you know, on the bench at Manchester United watching Wayne Rooney play number 10 really badly, which is probably what's going to happen if he doesn't assert himself in this team. And you'd hope that if any manager can get the best out of him, it's Zinedine Zidane, who was, of course, a wonderful number 10 as well. So fingers crossed it works out for him, but tactically I think there's still a bit of an issue there.
That leaves Barcelona 3 points behind Real Madrid and Atletico 4 points behind. They obviously play each other in midweek, a massive fixture in Spain. But Real Madrid's next games are against Villarreal and Las Palmas. So not only can they smash that 16-run record, they could probably set a new benchmark as well in Spain. Now moving over to the Bundesliga, Dortmund scored their second 6-0 win of the week after beating Legia Warsaw 6-0 in the Champions League. They absolutely they pumped Darmstadt 6-0 as well. I mean, if they're not going to win the Bundesliga, they're going to win something like the Europe, maybe, Amar?
You'd have to think that they're going to be in the reckoning, you know, when spring comes along next year. For me, I think, you know, when their big guns are not firing, when Aubameyang and Royce are not scoring the goals, they've got goals from all over the team.
They weren't even playing in that match.
Yeah, so they've got Castro scored a couple of goals. For me, Pulisic looks like an unbelievable prospect. I think he's not even 18 yet, and he's got two assists and one goal. So, you know, really, really promising times at Dortmund, absolutely.
Mm. Rory, as a admirer of, a connoisseur, if I will, of lovely footballers and midfielders in general.
Yes.
Julian Weigl, what a player.
What a prospect. You know, one for Germany to really, you've got to have him in your main, you know, starting lineup for Germany in the future. For Dortmund, though, he's just like orchestrating everything they do.
He's changed how they play.
Yeah, they don't. I mean, Tuchel's found an absolute gem. I mean, he was a bit of a sort of rough diamond at 1860 Munich. He got in a bit of trouble when he was bad-mouthing the team, and then they had to basically usher him out the door.
He was captain for a day, and then yeah. Something like that, wasn't
it? Some nasty incident or something, but rather untasteful.
Kids, eh? Ooh.
Yeah, but he'll learn and he'll grow up, and I think he's got, you know, because he's got so much time to do it, you'd like to think he'd sort of emulate sort of the people like Schweinsteiger of the past.
Mm-hmm. Another 6-0 win in Europe. PSG beat Caen in Ligue 1. Cavani actually goes on target this time. He scored 4 goals.
Yeah, because he's Caen are rubbish. He bottles it in the big occasions. He'll score against the likes of Caen. He'll score against all the NAF teams you put him up against. You put him against anyone halfway decent, and he'll fluff his lines. Or if he manages to score a goal like he did against Arsenal, he'll then miss an absolute sitter. Like
that's the
weird
thing. His movement is really good for a striker. He just can't finish.
Yeah, he loses his nerve way too easily. Yeah.
I think with Cavani, his problems are magnified, as you say, because he has these issues in the biggest games and the biggest stage. And for me, he's not as great as a number 9 should be for PSG. He's not quite fit to take over from Ibrahimovic in that role. But for me, he's probably not as bad as what people say either, you know. It's just a case of whether he can assert himself in that number 9 role. If not, then they've got Heze, who I think is a real prospect.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. But if you've got, I mean, you know, you score 4 against Con, you're still a Con, let's be honest.
Oh, Rory, yeah. Fantastic.
There we go. There's a bit.
Well, we talked about one player in middling form there in Cavani, but we're going to talk about your players of the season so far. I mean, there's been 5 games played in the Premier League. Who's stood out for you, Amar? Who's the players that you really picked
out? I'll go for a couple of less glamorous names, but there's nothing I love more than a well-timed run into the box. So the two players I've selected are very good at this. One is Mikel Antonio. Times his run amazingly into the box, has scored 5 headers.
More than any other player.
So absolutely head of the class. I'm turning into Rory with bad puns, aren't I? God. And then the other one is Etienne Capoue. Again scored a fantastic goal with a well-timed run. Should have been tracked by Pogba, as Mo pointed out in his video this weekend. Has scored 4 goals in 5 games. Looks absolutely brilliant. Looks exactly the player that Spurs wanted him to be. He's playing in a bit more of an advanced role this season for Watford and looks really confident.
Mo, who's been standing out for you?
Kevin De Bruyne, John Stones, basically Raheem Sterling, you know, just Man City's best players. They've been by far the best. They're playing different kind of sport altogether, really. De Bruyne's got the most assists in the league. I think joint most chances created. You know, Sterling just absolutely... He had 10 take-ons completed at the weekend. 10. That's just ridiculous. He's running by guys like they're not there. John Stones, as I go back to again, he's playing 40-yard passes with his weak foot. You know, he came off the bench at 95% pass completion rate, only misplaced 3 passes. You know, they just look absolutely superb, and they're the three young... Well, De Bruyne is 24, but they're the three young talents that along with Sané, that Pep's going to build his side around. And, you know, it wouldn't surprise me overly if... we're speaking of Julian Weigl earlier. If Man City make a cheeky little bid for him in the summer to...
They've got enough midfielders, surely.
Pep Guardiola, you can never have enough midfielders, my friend.
Just pack him in.
He'd play a team with 11 midfielders.
He would if he could. He literally has said, I would if I could do that. So... it wouldn't surprise me if they make a bid for him. Fernandinho's 30, 31, you know, I could see that happening. He'd fit in so perfectly with their system.
Rory, yeah. Who's been your player so far? Can we only have one? Can you whittle it down to just...
Well, I wanted to go with the appealer of the Potteries, Joe Allen, but you know, it's not really worked out for him yet. So really, it's kind of Kevin De Bruyne on his own pedestal, right up there. And who was Guardiola said, you know, he was sitting at the table next to Messi, not quite as good as Messi, but near enough. But I think other than him, it would be Sterling and actually Santi Cazorla, who's taken Ozil's starring role. A bit of a surprise for many people.
Not for me.
I suppose to be above Ozil after that season, perhaps, let's say.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Very good. Very good. I'm going to have to big up Raheem Sterling as well. I mean, he's not just 10 take-ons this weekend. He's done 20 take-ons in 5 games so far. 69% success rate. 6 chances created, 2 assists, and 3 goals scored. Suffered 11 fouls. He's a danger man, isn't he? He's just... You try and stop him, you usually bring him down.
Yeah,
you get a free kick against you. So yeah, one to look out for. Hopefully, he has a great season for England as well. So yeah, anyway, that's all we got time for today on the podcast. So thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening, Amar. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you,
Mo. Thanks once again for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Greg.
And Rory. Yeah. I mean, it's just great having you on.
It's a pleasure.
It is always a pleasure. Yeah. Always a pleasure. Join us next time for another great podcast, and check out squawk.com for all our usual analysis, features, reaction, news, all the rest of it. You can always like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter as well @Squawker and Squawker News. Thanks for listening, and join us again soon. Goodbye.